getting you home quicker.
This is 105 Drive with Julian Clover.
Cambridge 105.
Dead Cat is the debut feature from Stephen Giorgio. The film is a quirky take on contemporary relationships in London, starring Sebastian Armesto and Sophia Dornay, playing childhood sweethearts Michael and Kirsten, who haven't spoken in 10 years and are brought back together by chance. The director, Stephen Giorgio, is with me now, and the film is also going to be playing at the Cambridge Film Festival this week. I think it's tomorrow, isn't it?
It is.
Hello, by the way. I'm always useless in saying hello to people at the start of these interviews.
No, hi. Thank you so much for having me in. It's a real pleasure, to be here. The film is actually screening twice at the festival. It's screening tomorrow at the Picture House at 11 o'clock at night, so it's quite a late one. It's the last film on tomorrow. And then it's screening at a much more reasonable 1:15 on Friday afternoon at the Picture House again.
Yeah, I kind of like the sound of the 1:15 showing, actually, if you don't mind. How long was the movie in the planning for? How long did it take to get it all together from start to finish?
We had a strange gestation, actually. We decided, Sam and I, my co-writer, that we were going to, when we started writing it, which was January, about 4 years ago, we said, OK, we're going to write this screenplay, and whatever we write, we have to film it by September. That was our goal. We didn't want to wait around. So we just said, by September, we're going to raise as much money as we can. We're going to write the screenplay for these actors that we know, and we're going to film it. That was our goal.
And how difficult was it to raise the financing? We hear about sometimes the big budget movies having difficulty. So I'm wondering, and forgive me, at the other end of the scale, then I guess it's going to be no better.
It's. I would prefer having the problems of raising money on a big budget film. it's obviously very, very difficult raising money. We tried to raise 30,000 for our film, and we managed to raise 24,000 by the time we were shooting. So, you know, and we did that by really the generosity of people giving donations, and we ran kind of a dating night, because a dating night happens in the film, speed dating. And then we kind of gave our own money and time to it as well. So
I gather, did you get any money from the BFI, the British Film Institute?
No, not
no.
a penny.
Yeah, I thought they had funds and stuff for that sort of thing.
You'd think. We actually showed them a cut of the film when we finished it to help us get some finance to finish the film. But unfortunately, our film was too small a film to give money to.
And I'm interested, you say you needed £30,000, but you started on with 24
That's
in
right.
the bank. Was that difficult? You know, was that a bit of a punt as to whether or not you could get the rest of the money in order to finish the film? And also, I guess you kind of had to risk the possibility of going over budget, which could happen.
Yeah. Well, to be honest with you, the film was made entirely on the spirit that we would make it for whatever money we had. So even if I only raised 20,000, everyone was on board under the proviso that whatever we had, we would make it. You know, this film was made by a lot of hard work and heart and time by a lot of people. And, you know, hardly anybody got paid. You know, people got paid expenses. But, you know, people gave their time because they would rather contribute to something creative rather than just sit at home and, you know, wanting to do something creative.
How did you finance yourself, though, in all of this?
I basically was teaching a lot, and I was making corporate films. And then we shot it all in 32 days. So I basically just took a month off work and then just, you know, threw myself into shooting it.
And where were the scenes, is it set?
It's set all over London. So
I kind of like movies in London, because I kind of, having lived there for about 15 or so years before coming up to Cambridge, you can go, oh, yes, I know that part. And, oh, yes, and oh, when you go around the... Oh, no, they're not going around that sort of thing.
And you know what? That's a key part of our film. Our film is very London, and we wanted to show a London that isn't, you know, the London that necessarily Richard Curtis shows. You know, it's not all...
It's a Notting Hill where there's a carnival taking place.
Exactly. Oh. It's not Notting Hill. It's kind of... It's the suburbs, and it's also... you know, the places that you walk past and you kind of recognise, but they're not London landmarks. So it's supposed to be a London that the people that live there recognise.
It's quite interesting, isn't it? Because you get a Richard Curtis perspective on London where the city is relentlessly cheerful, and then at the other end of it you might get a Sweeney, gritty kind of drama. And there's nothing which is really in between telling the story, or dare I say the sort of bars I used to hang out in, which weren't particularly special, but they were quite nice at the time.
Exactly. And you know what, you've hit it on the head. That is exactly what we were aiming for. Our film is not about You know, the beautiful, consumptuous London that he shows, or even the Mike Lee kind of much dirtier and grittier London. It's the in-between. It's, and that stretches across the class as well, because our film is very kind of lower middle class. It's people that work, you know, they work hard for their money and they just about survive in London, and it's about those people. It's not about the kind of upper middle classes or the working classes.
So tell me about the characters then. Who are they? They're two people who used to know each other, used to be in love, and then they meet again after a period of 10 or so years.
That's exactly right. So they were a couple. They were in love when they were in their late teens, and for some reason, we don't know why, they split up, and they don't see each other for 10 years. 10 years later, they meet at a speed dating event, purely by accident. And, you know, the film is really, it's a love story about a second chance at a first love. You know, I think a lot of people have that person when they were younger who they, you know, they fell in love with, and for whatever stupid reason, you know, they're not together with that person. And you never forget that person, in my experience anyway. And we wanted to tell a story that was about what happened if you met that person again later in life, and you'd moved on and they'd moved on, but there was still something.
That spark in there.
That's right. There was still something that was from the past, and this film is really about exploring whether that something is nostalgia or whether that really is that second chance to fall in love with that person.
I think modern life has maybe changed how relationships both are formed and almost how they're maintained. If you compare today with even 20 years ago, society has changed, and I guess views have changed as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully the film addresses that. You know, it's a very contemporary film, contemporary in terms of how people meet, you know, dating, and, you know, people find each other online now, which certainly didn't happen 20 years ago. And obviously, our main protagonist, he still lives at home. You know, he's 30 years old. He still lives at home with his father. And, you know, that happens a lot in London because it's a very expensive city. And unfortunately, you know, we can't just keep going out when we're 25, you know, 25 to 30 and buying our flats. A lot of people stay at home. Unfortunately, I was shamelessly guilty of that. As I was trying to make my films, you know, I had to live with, you know, my parents. And
did you go back home?
I went back home to save money so I could make this film.
Cool. What's the phrase? Boomerang Kids. That's the phrase, isn't it? Which is used. Yeah.
That is the label with which I'm emblazoned with, I'm ashamed to say. But, you know, it happens a lot, and we wanted our film to reflect what London was at that time a few years ago.
And the music for the film, how did you gather that together? I gather there's at one end of the scale you've got quite a few up-and-coming bands who donated the use of their work to help keep those costs down, that 24,000.
Yeah, so we were very fortunate. We showed a cut of the film, an early cut, to Sony, and a very good man, Sam Mumford at Sony, was kind enough to kind of see potential in our film, and he kind of said, you know what, guys, I've got loads of up-and-coming bands, some great music that would love to be associated with your up-and-coming movie. And so we kind of combined forces, and, you know, we've got a great soundtrack that is, again, contemporary, it's of its time, and
hopefully,
we've got our main song is a band called Dry the River, who are doing really, really well at the moment in the States. We've got great bands, and we did try to get a track by Nick Drake. We have a kind of main song. There's a main song in the film. Like I said, we used Dry the River, but we wanted a Nick Drake song.
The other end of the scale, and an artist, you know, very well known, of course, for his association with Cambridge.
Exactly, and we loved this Nick Drake song, and thankfully the Drake estate kind of said, we love your script, we'd love to give you, you know, access to the song, which was kind of, you know, amazing.
And funny enough, when I had breakfast this morning with Neil and Lottie, we're talking about their series UFO, which starred, of course, Nick Drake's sister, Gabrielle Drake.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Oh, okay, that's amazing. Yeah, so, I mean, it's crazy how it goes. And unfortunately, when we spoke to the record company, they wanted to charge us, I think it was £15,000 to use his song, which was pretty much the entire budget of our film. So, unfortunately, it didn't work out with the Nick Drake song, but hopefully in a future film I'll get to use it.
We've actually got that. We're going to play Time Has Told Me in just a moment or
Excellent.
Two. But I do have to ask you a few details about the showing tomorrow,
yes.
Part of the Cambridge Film Festival. How does it work? Did they come to you, or did you put the film forward?
I submitted the film. I used to live in London, and I moved out to Cambridgeshire about 8 months ago. I'd heard about the festival. I think it's a very prestigious festival, and I really wanted to be part of it. And so I submitted the film, and thankfully they liked it, and now it's screening twice. I can't wait.
Are you going to be involved in the screening at all, or just sitting happily in the front row and marvelling at your work?
I certainly won't be sitting in the front row. I'll probably be hiding at the back. but I am doing a Q&A for both screenings, which I'm really looking forward to. So
there's an early and a late, isn't there? There's 11 o'clock and the other one is 1:15, you said.
Yeah, 1:15 on Friday is the one for the... for the respectable people, I think.
I think so too. Well, Stefan, thank you very much for coming
pleasure.
And joining us. We're going to end with Nick Drake, Time Has Told Me.
Thank you.